From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Thursday, April 7th, 2016. Ladies and gents, boys and girls, we have a fantastic hour in store for all of you out there. Of course, today marks the start of one of my favorite sporting events. That's right, the Masters is taking place right now. We're going to give you an update, and we'll give you an update throughout this entire hour on who exactly is leading the pack in the first round of the Masters. You do not want to miss that. We'll also have plenty of Tiger talk for you as the Detroit Tigers swept the Marlins to start the year, opening day at Comerica Park. Just one day away now, so that should be fun. We'll also give you a preview, as we customarily do each and every Thursday here on the show, of the night's Current Sports TV interview. This week, I got the chance to sit down with Michigan State University chemistry professor Gary Blanchard, who is actually teamed up with the MSU football team to do some unprecedented research when it comes to concussions on the gridiron. Okay, you do not want to miss this one. Trust me, Gary even actually brought in the prototype to our TV studios last night. It was certainly something to behold, and much of the wordage completely went over my head, but I think it did a great job of actually having Gary dumb it down. All right, so we'll give you a preview of that chat. And also on the back end of the show, it is Thursday. We will take a look at what happened on this particular date in sports history with Throwback Thursday, and I will have a rebuttal to current sports engineer Isaac Constant's hot take on Wild Take Wednesday, as he believes that Steph Curry should not be a unanimous MVP. All right, all of that and so much more. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, you know what's next. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this April 7th. All right, folks, former Michigan State Spartan and current L.A. Clipper Brandon Dawson will not face charges in the spousal abuse case due to insufficient evidence. Now, Dawson was arrested for spousal abuse last month and told the L.A. Times on Sunday, quote, "I'm not that kind of a guy. I'm not a criminal. That's not me." Again, insufficient evidence in that case, so Dawson will not face any charges. All right, the Michigan State University Alumni Association is offering a $1,000 reward for information leading to the arrest of whoever stole the Sparty golf cart from the student union on Sunday. Who would do such a thing? All right, any witness who comes forward will remain anonymous, and the $1,000 will be donated to a student organization of their choice. Now, the witness will also receive two free tickets to any home football game next season. So there's plenty of incentive there. Anyone with information is asked to call Detective Chad Davis at 517-355-2226. Again, 517-355-2226. That is Detective Chad Davis. All right, it looks like Michigan men's basketball's coaching staff is going to have a vacancy this offseason, as assistant coach Lavelle Jordan has reportedly agreed to become the University of Milwaukee, Wisconsin's head coach. Jordan earned a reputation as a point guard guru at Michigan, helping develop Darius Morris, Trey Burke, and Spike Aubrey, among others, over his 6 years with the program. Congratulations to Mr. Jordan. That is certainly deserved. All right, how about those Detroit Pistons last night? The Pistons defeated the Orlando Magic last night to improve their magic number, pun intended, down to one. One more win for the D, and they're in the playoffs. For the first time in 7 years, Reggie Jackson, Action Jackson, led the Pistons in scoring with 24 points, while KCP, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, added 18 as the Pistons mounted a comeback in the fourth quarter to win 108-104. The Pistons have 3 games left against the Washington Wizards, Miami Heat, and LeBron and the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Detroit Red Wings picked up a huge win last night over the Philadelphia Flyers. Goalie Jimmy Howard pitched the shutout in the 3-0 win. The victory puts the Wings in a playoff position. Detroit can clinch a playoff spot tonight with a win over the Boston Bruins to keep the playoff streak going into an unprecedented 25th consecutive year. Wow. So good news for both the Wings and the Pistons. All right. The OHL has come down hard on the Flint Firebirds and their owner, Rolf Nielsen. Now, Nielsen has been suspended, forget this, 5 years, and will have to pay a fine of $250,000. The Ontario Hockey League will manage the team. In addition, the Firebirds will give up a first-round number 3 pick in the OHL draft. Now, this is the result of constant turmoil in the organization in its first year of operation, which included the double firing. I kid you not. He fired the team's head coach and then rehired him and then fired him again. Yeah, in the first fire, player walkouts and a strike led to the rehiring of the head coach. Just a mess. The definition of a mess. All right, the Detroit Tigers are still on pace for a 162-0 season. Yeah, that won't happen. Let's be real here. But they started off with a 2-game series sweep over the Miami Marlins. In yesterday's game, former Marlin Jerry Salatamakia and Anibal Sanchez led the way for the Tigers. How big were they yesterday, huh? Now, Salatamakia hit a big 2-run homer against his former team in a 4-RBI showing. He was fantastic, and Sanchez picked up the dub, allowing 2 runs on 5 innings pitched. The Tigers are off today, but will have their home opener at 1 p.m. tomorrow against the Yankees. And last but not least, the Masters are taking place right now, and this is how the leaderboard looks. Jordan Spieth leads the charge at 4-under on the day. Paul Casey at number 2 at 3-under. Then you have 4 players actually tied for 3rd. Dustin Johnson, Hideki Matsuyama, Daniel Berger, and Keegan Bradley all at 2-under. Again, we'll give you live updates of what is panning out at the Masters in 2016 throughout this hour. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's start the show. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh boy, do you get chills when you hear that music? There is absolutely nothing like the Masters, ladies and gents. It is probably my 3rd favorite sporting event, I must say. Behind the Super Bowl being at number 1. You guys know I'm a big NBA fan, so that has to be number 2, the NBA playoffs / finals. And the Masters sitting at number 3. I even like the Masters better than March Madness. I love March Madness, don't get me wrong. There is nothing like March Madness, folks. But just the rich tradition at the Masters. Oh, nothing like it. I will be glued to my television throughout the next 4 days, watching intently rounds 1 through 4 to see who dons the green jacket this year. Of course, Jordan Spieth is the defending champion of the Masters. And as I just mentioned, Jordan Spieth is leading the pack right now. You know, it's so tough to not just win the Masters. You know, again, it opens up the golf year, the golf major year. And it's not just tough to win the Masters. But to do it in back-to-back years is pretty much unprecedented. All right, I think the last golfer that we saw do that was Tiger Woods. So Jordan right now is off to an ideal start to the Masters. He sits at 4 under through 10 holes. And I have been watching the Golf Channel since 9 a.m. this morning. And, you know, it's so interesting, though, because, you know, I've really gotten to golf. And, again, it's hard to have the conversation of professional golf without bringing up that name, without bringing up Tiger Woods' name. Because I, like many fans of the game today, became a fanatic of the sport due to what Tiger Woods was doing in the late 90s, bleeding on all the way up until, what, like 2007, 2008, all right? And again, we all know the storyline since 2008. Tiger Woods has not won a major since 08. But when you evaluate what Tiger Woods meant to golf during that time frame, again, like the mid to late 90s into the 2000 era, there was no one more popular in the game of golf, and arguably, when you evaluate the early 2000s, no more popular athlete in sports than Tiger Woods. And it was so unprecedented what Tiger was doing at that time. Again, he was blowing out the field by an average of double-digit strokes, okay? It's a phenomenon that we had previously never before seen. And the closest one who comes to that, of course, is the great Jack Nicklaus, who I think will go down. Now we're looking at this whole fiasco with Tiger Woods, and he's not playing in the Masters this year. He's still recuperating and trying to get his health back up to par. No pun intended. But I just don't believe that the way it's gone. Again, it's been 8 years, folks, since Tiger has won his last major. I don't see him catching Jack anymore. I used to hold on to that hope and hold on to the notion that Tiger was going to be back and return and win a major and get back in that groove, but it just does not seem realistic. But to put it in perspective, going back to my original point here, I mean, we had never seen a phenomenon such as Tiger, and I don't think we ever will. And the question is constantly brought up is, where is the state of golf right now? Is it in a healthy state right now? And there's two sides to this argument, because there's a side of me that wants to say yes, because when you evaluate the young talent in the game right now, and we all know who the four big names are when having this discussion. Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, Jason Day, and I'm blanking on the last one here. Is it...
top of the leaderboard?
Yes. No. I'm talking about the four young golfers. Ricky Fowler, Jason Day, Rory McIlroy, and
okay.
Jordan Spieth. How'd I whiff on Rory McIlroy, dude? He's like the biggest name out of Spieth and Rory. But those four, when you evaluate what those four are doing within the game today, I mean, it's really remarkable. Really remarkable. And, you know, you look at the Tiger Woods era. I mean, Tiger really, he was leading the game by himself, all right? He was Superman during that time. But when you look at the four young studs of today's game, who are really, you know, have really, you know, the torch has been passed on to those four young studs. You know, it's kind of like the approach, okay, Tiger was Superman. These four are like the Avengers, all right? They're as a collective group, taking over that reign and trying to pump life into the game. And I remember when we had the discussion of the popularity state of golf last year, and I had watched and sat down and watched a report from Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel on HBO. And I'll never forget the statistic. Last year, a report was done that found that one golf course closes on planet Earth every 48 hours. How crazy is that statistic, right? How nuts is that? And we saw the complete opposite of that statistic when Tiger was completely dominating the game. Tiger, he hit on so many different demographics, because here you had an African-American and a half-Asian, half-African-American golfer going out there and playing the game like we had never seen it before. He had that eye of the tiger, you know, if you will. You know, and he was an athlete that wanted to go out there and not just win, but dominate. You know, it kind of reminded me of Michael Jordan, you know, the way Michael Jordan used to play back in the day. He didn't want to beat you. He wanted to embarrass you. He wanted to stomp on your throat. And traditionally, that's not the type of game that golf is. It's a really classy game. You're supposed to be a guy who goes out there, you know, not show too much emotion. And, you know, you're not supposed to curse and throw your clubs. It's a gentleman's game at the end of the day. Tiger Woods threw that notion totally out the window, all right? I mean, how many times did we see Tiger, if he hit a bad shot, engage in a profanity-laced tirade? It was fun to watch, though. It brought eyeballs to the television because it was different. And it was good. It was entertaining. It was drama. It was all of that packed into one single man. One single man who went out there and dominated. So, I really believe, and this would, you know, we all, when analyzing the demise of Tiger Woods, we all go to the year of 2008. We all go to November of that year, Thanksgiving weekend, when he got into it with his, at the time, wife, and the news broke that Tiger Woods was not a faithful man in the marriage. And, you know, you had these different women come out and talk about, you know, their relationship with Tiger Woods. And it painted him in a bad light. And his persona took a huge hit. So much so that Tiger Woods became a people pleaser. The same Tiger Woods that we saw go out there and was motivated by dominance and was driven to just go out there and not care what people thought of him, not care about, you know, if you didn't agree with him going on and flipping out because of a bad shot. He didn't care what you thought about him during that time. And that's what made Tiger Woods great. There was a method to that madness. Tiger was his true self. But after 2008, he tried to please everybody. He knew that his image took a hit, and he tried to go out there and be a goody two-shoes. And it wasn't who he was. You know, he tried to dial down his emotion when he was out on the course. He tried to dial down, you know, how many F-bombs he would say if he hit a bad shot. You know, and I get it. You know, it may have been good from a character standpoint for those that enjoy the tradition of the game, but it was not who Tiger Woods was, and it's not who Tiger Woods ever will be. Simple as that. So, and, you know, he lost that eye of the tiger in my eyes. So now when you look at the game today, yes, there are young studs taking over that reign. There is that fearsome foursome, you know, of Rory and Jordan and Jason Day, you know, and Ricky. Those guys are unbelievable, but they're just not Tiger. And I think we all know that. But again, we have to, and I think golf is healing right now. I do believe that golf is healing. They're getting over the Tiger effect. As much as they don't want to, they are slowly but surely getting over it. Young golfers are watching these young studs and watching what they are doing year in and year out and are getting inspired from it. I just don't know if this young group can have the same reach that Tiger once had. But nonetheless, let's enjoy it, folks. These guys aren't going to be Tiger Woods, but we have to enjoy good golf when we see it. And watching these players play, especially Jordan Spieth, I mean, this is a young kid. Again, he won the Masters last year. He's already rocking a green jacket and is going out there and still competing, all right? He's not resting on his laurels here. Jordan certainly is such a competitive guy. He's such a competitive guy, and I love watching him play. And he's going out there right now on day one, round one of the Masters, going out there and carding a 4-under to start through 11 now. So it's impressive to watch, and I'm curious, who do you think is going to win this year? And I truly believe that, again, we don't normally see a back-to-back champion in the Masters. It's something that's so rare. It's so hard to do. I'm not choosing Jordan to win this whole thing. I'm actually going with Jason Day to win the whole thing. But this year, this is the year where you can legitimately argue that there are about 20 to 25 golfers that can win this year's Masters. That's how deep it is. And I think that's what's been birthed. Since the fall of Tiger Woods, that's what's been birthed in today's golf game. There's so much parity in the golf game today that you don't have, and I can't believe, looking back, and how amazing is it that Tiger was so good at one point that we were legitimately, when looking at the entire field of professional golfers on a tournament-by-tournament basis. Hundreds participating each and every round. We legitimately would sit up there and debate. Tiger Woods or the field? Are you kidding me, Tiger? Was that good? I want to invite right now the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Costins, to the show. Isaac, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Yeah, I think this is a really important topic of conversation because Jordan Spieth, and you mentioned the players that he surrounds himself with, his cohorts who are all young, all talented, Jason Day, Rory McIlroy, and Ricky Fowler. These guys are pushing each other in terms of talent so far in a positive direction. This is as good as the golf game's been since Tiger Woods at his prime.
Without a doubt.
Talent-wise, I'm not sure if we've ever seen something really top the competition that these four have every single tournament. But you're absolutely right. The game just has never climbed back to that point popularity-wise that it was with Tiger Woods. And I don't know what it was. I think you mentioned he was multi-ethnic and he just appealed to so many people because golf, shoot, when I was a four-year-old kid, I didn't want to watch golf because I wanted to watch Thomas the Tank Engine and I wanted to watch football and I wanted to watch basketball because I wanted to get excited, riled up.
He made golf cool. Yeah, Tiger made golf cool. He did. You know, and him wearing red each and every Sunday. And
exactly.
Also, you know, I've even heard this theory thrown out, Isaac, because Tiger was different. That's why the golf world was so intrigued by him, because he wasn't your normal, you know, Caucasian male going out there and just playing the game and wearing the same duds. It's been beat to death so much when you look at the tradition of golf. Then Tiger came on the scene, and then you have this guy who's black and Asian going out there showing emotion on the course and having just a swagger that was different from everybody. Each and every tournament. So that's what made it so intriguing. Then you go to the commercials. You know, he linked up with Nike, and
so
we all
cool.
know. Oh, yeah. That was so smart because we all know how great Nike is when it comes to their, you know, marketing campaigns. And they put Tiger everywhere. They gave him his own logo, the T&W. Then you had the Tiger Woods video game come out with EA Sports, and that was so big. I remember playing that on Xbox. That was my game. I love that game. And he was everywhere, though. He was a face that you could not turn on ESPN or any other media outlet. He was a face that you couldn't turn on without seeing at least one time. It was so fascinating, unlike anything we've ever seen before.
And for you personally, Al, was Tiger Woods why you got into golf?
Certain, without a doubt.
Exactly.
Without Tiger Woods, I would not be playing each and every Sunday because Tiger, and I saw a direct effect. I'm from the west side of Detroit, a predominantly African-American, you know, base. And I remember growing up on the west side of Detroit, and my neighbor's dad, who's one of my best friends, Carlton Ramsey, his dad, the only reason that his dad picked up clubs was because, and he said this, that because he was inspired by what Tiger Woods was doing. The only reason my dad picked up clubs was because he saw what Tiger Woods was doing. And I remember specifically, I was probably around like 13 years old. So I remember going out to play golf with my neighbor's father. I think it was a Saturday morning. And I don't know, I forget what tournament was going on. But I remember we went Rouge Park. Rouge Park,
oh, yeah.
They had their own course there. And we go to the course, right? And Tiger's playing. It's a Saturday morning. Tiger and I just teed off. And all of the brothers are lined in the clubhouse, glued to the television, talking about Tiger Woods and talking about his style and how he hits the ball and just having these conversations about Tiger. I will never forget that. That's the only reason they were tuned in, okay? They weren't tuned in to watch Phil Mickelson, all right? They were watching Tiger Woods. But Tiger, he inspired so many individuals. And that's why I think we won't see anything like that again, I don't think, Isaac.
No, I don't either. Because those battles, you mentioned Phil Mickelson. That's the other important component to this. Mm-hmm. The contrast of those two. They were such friends and rivals on the golf courses where they competed. But they together embodied every single person in the face of the United States who wanted to play golf. And it was perfect. They just drew out crowds. They drew out watchers on TV. And I'm not sure if that can be matched. you look at somebody today like Ricky Fowler, one of the guys who I think has the most swag in golf.
He does. Have you seen his high top shoes that he wears? They look like basketball shoes that he wears when he's on the golf course. Oh, his style, I think he's with Puma, if I'm not mistaken.
Puma. It is
Puma. He is with Puma. He's got these high tops that have never been worn before in golf. Google them when you get a chance. They're so fly. Then he wears the tight pants. He's got the Puma shirts like they're allowed, you know, like orange, neon colors.
Yeah.
Yeah, like neon orange or neon blue, you know what I mean? He's rocking like the flat bill, you know, hat.
Love the flat bill.
Oh man, that foursome of Jason Day again, Ricky Fowler, Rory McIlroy and Jordan Spieth. That foursome is so intriguing because they're all young and they're all cool. They all have their own swag. You know what I mean? So there is hope here. And with the right marketing, this is the thing. The game of golf has to continuously get those four out there. You have to pub them because I think they've done a relatively good job, but they need to be on commercials left and right. Get their faces out there, without a doubt.
I agree. But I think golf still needs the fifth, too. I think golf.
You think so?
I think golf is missing somebody like Tiger Woods, who comes from a community not usually synonymous with golf.
Something different.
Something to attract all of the U.S. And you know what? Even for the traditional golfers, Tiger was so perfect because he put a new flair to it. He gave them something that they hadn't seen before, where the old men were excited again about golf and the new guys were getting into it. It was just perfect for everybody. He revitalized the sports. And although I think the main four are great for the sport right now, I don't think they're the same.
Yeah, I agree. Folks, call in and weigh in on the Masters. And who do you think is going to win the Masters? Who do you got? I'm choosing Jason Day, Isaac. But it's so wide open. You can choose anybody out the field, and they will have a shot, to be honest with you. Who do you got?
I've got Jordan Spieth. I think he repeats. He was good on this course. Well, good is an understatement, but he was great on this course last year. Mm-hmm. And then the start that he's gotten off to, he looks like he's right back up to his old tricks.
Yeah, he's so good. And again, he's right now leading the field. To give you guys a quick update, right now Jordan leads the field through 12 at 4 under. Daniel Berger is right on his heels, though, through 8 at 3 under. So again, we'll give you guys an update as the show continues here of what is taking place out at the Masters. And also, I want to throw out this conspiracy theory. I've heard this this morning. When concerning the health of Tiger Woods and why he hasn't been able to get to a healthy standpoint in quite some time, a lot of people are actually, I mean, this goes to that same conversation that we were having about Tiger Woods being different. Tiger Woods was really the only golfer that took the athlete part of a golfer really serious. He was the only golfer that I can remember going out running, you know, like something like 5 miles a day, weight training, doing CrossFit.
Stairs, everything.
You know, he treated golf like he was a guy running for a marathon. You know what I mean? And that was something that was so different. You know, and you talk about, you know, golfers of today, and there were numerous golfers that when having that conversation of what Tiger Woods was doing as far as, you know, bulking up his body and looking like a bodybuilder out in the golf course, you know, they would admit, like, no, I don't work out. I just swing a club. You know what I mean? So, and he inspired that younger generation. I don't know if you follow Rory McIlroy on social media, but he's always posting on his social media account some new exercise that he's doing. But going back to this conspiracy theory, there are some that are arguing that Tiger Woods working out so much and weightlifting and running, you know, miles and miles and miles each and every day, there are some that are arguing that because of Tiger Woods worked out so much, his body is now breaking down. Isn't that supposed to be the exact opposite, Isaac? I don't know if I'm buying that, but I heard Rick Bucher debating that on Bleacher Report Radio this morning.
Yeah, I think that's more lazy boy recliner chair speak. Like, no, working right. out's bad for you. I'm not doing that because that right. ruined Tiger's career. No, come on. Go work out. After the show's done, run a couple miles, lift some weights, whatever. Working out is good for you. I'm no scientist, but I'm positive about that.
Exactly. I agree. That's very far-fetched. As to why Tiger Woods has not been able to get healthy, again, he's had numerous back problems. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe he pulled something working out. Maybe you could attribute it to that. I have no idea. But I'm really hoping that we do see Tiger Woods back on the golf course to get back to some form of relevancy, because right now is not looking good. He's still 3 in back of the all-time majors record of 20 set by, of course, the great Jack Nicklaus. And I actually, for those who are my Facebook friends, I actually posted a video of Jack Nicklaus driving into the Masters today. Did you see that, Isaac?
I saw that. I saw it on your Facebook wall.
It is so cool because he's driving up in his car, right? And I don't know who's next to him filming the video, but you see Jack in just a normal atmosphere. He's just driving in his car, just going to the Masters because he's teeing off for the ceremonial tee off to open up the Masters ceremony. And you see the security guards. He runs into I think three security guards that engage him in conversation. And they're all like in awe of him. And there's one guy who says, "Oh, I need to scan your bag. Yes, I have to do that." And then Jack pulls out, some small little card, and he's like, "Do you really gotta scan this?" And he looks at the name. He reads the name, and he's like, "Oh, whoa. I'm sorry. No, you're good. You're good. Just go ahead and pass through." It's so funny, dude. But it just shows you the draw that Jack had. And again, Tiger is in back three majors in back of tying that all-time record of 20 that Jack Nicklaus set. I don't think he's going to get there. I really don't think he's going to get there, Isaac. I think we can put that conversation to bed. And with that being said, as much as it hurts me to say this, because I'm one of the biggest Tiger Woods fans you're ever meet in your life, I think that you will have to keep Jack Nicklaus as the greatest golfer of all time. I don't think you can put Tiger as that number one guy because he will not eclipse that record.
Or at least tie it. And at his peak, I think you can definitely make the debate that Tiger was the best of all time because just the density in which his wins came, nobody's matched that. But you mentioned Jack Nicklaus. That aura that comes along with him, he's got a drink named after him. He's got all sorts
of things. Arnold Palmer.
Arnold Palmer, right. I'm sorry. But I'm sure there is somewhere a Jack Nicklaus drink. There's got to be. But at the same time, no, Jack Nicklaus, the other thing I loved about that video is he's driving on the wrong side of the road. There are a bunch of cars waiting in line. It looks like they've been stuck for hours trying to get into this tournament. Jack just goes into the other lane, cross the yellow line, and just drives right through. It's like Grand Theft Auto or something if you turn the cars on the other side off. But it's really outstanding. And Tiger Woods, yeah, I don't think he hits that mark or I'm not even sure if he gets another, but I hope that he can get one more.
I really do.
Just throw a little intrigue into it.
Exactly. I really hope he does get one more before he decides to call it quits and retire. All right, folks, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Detroit Tigers. Again, they start off the year with a sweep against the Miami Marlins. We'll chat about that series, and also we will give you a preview of tonight's Current Sports TV sit-down with Michigan State University chemistry professor Gary Blanchard. That and so much more. Hey, don't touch that dial. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. All right, all right, all right. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. How about them Tigers? Yeah, it wasn't easy. Not easy by any stretch of the imagination, but they did complete the sweep out in the MIA against the Miami Marlins. Wasn't easy, though. I know many Tigers fans, if you are a diehard Tigers fan, you certainly almost had a heart attack when watching these last two games. And, you know, I love this team. This is going to be a fun team to watch this year, without a doubt. Big bats everywhere, okay? The Tigers can certainly bring them around town. 15 runs in two games. And in two games, the Tigers have had back-to-back four RBI efforts from Ian Kinsler. Wow, a big hats off to Ian Kinsler. He has been absolutely huge. Again, he's just lighting it up right now. And backup catcher, Jared Salatamakia. Home run and a double for that man against his former team. How about that? I find that story probably that is the story coming out of yesterday's 7-3 win. Because Salatamakia, I mean, he's such a good player, first off. And you know, it's so much intrigue when talking about, you know, how he got the call, you know, for the Detroit Tigers, and how he's become a staple and a hallmark for this team going into this season. But what makes it so, what makes yesterday's, you know, and even these past two games, you know, so intriguing when it comes to when discussing Saleh Tamaki is because the Miami Marlins, his former team, they are still paying him moolah. That's right. He is still getting a check from the Marlins. The Marlins are still paying his rent, without a doubt. Exactly. Ka-ching, right? You know, it would have been a perfect opportunity for Saleh Tamaki to gloat, and he certainly did that yesterday. The team right now, the Marlins, are paying Saleh Tamaki because they are paying him what is owed on the remainder of his 3-year, $21 million contract, minus his Tigers salary. So, you know, the team that gave him up is still paying him, and he repaid that notion yesterday. I'm really excited to see him play, but I will say this. Different year, same old problems for the Tigers. I feel like the D is where closers come to die. Simple as that. You know, and I feel like there's a curse surrounding around the Detroit Tigers when it comes to their closers over the years. Man, Francisco Rodriguez, he got a second chance to make a first impression with his new team because that first game that went to extra innings was not the greatest outing. Not the greatest outing. The Tigers actually had a 4-run lead yesterday. Then what happens? Miami loaded the bases, and Marlins slugger Giancarlo Stanton came up to the plate. Now, Stanton, you know, he had hit a rocket off Justin Verlander on Tuesday night. And many people were chomping on their fingernails and watching that game. Tigers fans, when he came to at bat. But that didn't happen. K-Rod came through, striking out Stanton and securing a 7-3 win and a series sweep over Miami. Isaac, this is the concern that I have had. This is the concern that Tigers fans have had for quite some time now. We all know that the Detroit Tigers have arguably the best lineup in baseball. Big bats everywhere. We all know that the Detroit Tigers have arguably the best starting pitching rotation in all of baseball. I love what they have. Now, you're shrugging and giving me a face there, but I love Justin Verlander. Justin Verlander had pitched a gem in his first outing this year. I love the acquisition of Sanchez, Jordan Zimmerman. I love Sanchez in that lineup as well. I love the starting pitching. The starting pitching is going to be solid. But the problem that constantly comes up is what is wrong with the Detroit Tigers bullpen. I had mentioned earlier this week how last year the Tigers finished 27th in Major League Baseball with an ERA of 4.38. That was last in the AL Central, second worst only to the A's. All right. Now they added Francisco Rodriguez. I do believe that strengthens the bullpen. Again, you play 162 games in a respective baseball year. So his first few outings haven't been great. But at the end of the day, it's still early. We still have a lot of baseball left to play. But I'm still not sold on what's coming out of that bullpen, Alec, Isaac.
Yeah, and to me, part of it is the Tigers played 6 pitchers last night. To me, that team seems like a team that's still trying to find, okay, who do we go to close out a game? Because Francisco Rodriguez wasn't exactly flattering Tigers owners with his first showing. Now, I think it's way too early to make a big deal about anything. This is 2 games into 162, and the Tigers are 2-0. Go celebrate, be happy, and also remember that the season's won. I'm going to try to do the math real quick. 81st over. So, really, there's nothing to really worry about, nothing to really celebrate. At the same time, though, I'm with you. I think that the bullpen so far still is in the, germinal stages. They need to figure out what the rotation is going to be. Because I agree, the starting pitching, I'm not sure about it, the best in the league, but very solid. They're top 10 easy. However, the, you know, backup rotation, the closers, the setups, all of that still needs to be cemented in terms of what you're going to do. What's your go-to when it comes to tight games? Because for me, the Tigers still seem a little bit rocky on that, a little bit unsure, because you know the bats are going to work 9 times out of 10. You know the starting pitchers are going to be one of the top 10, top 8 squads in the entire league. However, I just don't know if the Tigers can keep relying and keep being unsure about what they're going to do when it comes to the 8th and 9th inning.
Well, you know what I think is the X factor in this whole conversation? The clear X factor in this whole conversation when discussing the success of the Detroit Tigers is the Tigers manager, Brad Ausmus. Simple as that. And I really do believe that if the bullpen is not performing up to expectation, you have to at least play around with the idea of stretching and milking your starting pitching as much as you possibly can. As much as I hate to say that, again, it's like old school baseball. You know, back in the day when starters used to ideally pitch the entire game, you didn't have a thing such as a bullpen or a closer. You know what I mean? Milk them. If the guy is hot, milk them. Get him more days of rest if you have to. But milk him. Why not? You know what I mean? And the Tigers yesterday, they had a 5-0 lead and blew it. Totally blew it. I'm sitting there saying to myself, you have to be kidding me. Is this really happening again? Deja vu all over again. So I'm excited to watch this team. And I do believe, and we got a chance to chat with the Detroit Tigers when they came to Lansing during the Winter Caravan, downtown Detroit, at the new home of the Lansing State Journal. We talked with a few players, but I think the most candid response coming out of that conversation was when we talked with Al Avila, the head man of the Tigers right now. And Al talked about how this is a do-or-die year. You know, they are expecting an appearance in the World Series. It has been do-or-die for the Tigers for, realistically, the last 5 years. They got to get there. Because if they don't this year, heads will roll. And I think Brad Ausmus right now, his seat is pretty hot. I do think that. I think if Brad Ausmus does not perform and does not get to the World Series this year, you have to have a serious conversation as to his future with the Detroit Tigers. Folks, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's give you a preview, as we customarily do each and every Thursday here during Current Sports Radio, of tonight's CSTV. That's right, Current Sports TV sit-down this week with Michigan State University chemistry professor Gary Blanchard. You know, it's so interesting when, you know, and it was one of my favorite interviews I've ever done, realistically, folks, because Gary, you know, he's an MSU chemistry professor, and it's so fun to dive into how he got involved with the Michigan State football team and how himself, along with fellow professor Marcos Dantas, how they linked up and said, you know what, we need to invent something that will help with the issue of concussions on the football field. It's such a remarkable story, and I found out about the story through Current Sports producer Tim Elkins. Tim came to me and said, hey, Al, have you seen this article? And it was an article written by R.J. Wolcott of the Lansing State Journal detailing what Marcos and Gary were up to. And you know, you got to see what their lab looked like, and they were doing these different tests and trying to come up with a solid prototype that they can introduce to D'Antonio's team that would help in the process of evaluating whether or not a respective player has a concussion or not. So we're going to give you a preview of that chat with Gary Blanchard right now. And again, I had to first start off by asking Gary how him and Marcos got involved with this project. Here's what he had to say.
We became aware of the fact that the NFL was doing research in this area. They put out a call for proposals, and we thought initially that some of the work that was going on in our labs might be useful. We subsequently found out that our initial idea was not going to fly, but that didn't mean the problem was going to go away. And so Marcos and I have been doing chemistry and measurement science for something on the order of 50 years between us. And when we're faced with a challenge like this, we ask ourselves, how is it that we can address the problem? Mm-hmm. That's how we got started on this. And it Turns out that it doesn't involve much chemistry.
Well, I tell you what, well, this is a prototype right now that we have in front of us. Can you break down, because you got to dumb it down for me. You know, I when reading the article, and R.J. Wolcott did a great job from the Lansing State Journal really of detailing the research that you guys are doing. Can you break down what we're seeing here and how this technology is being used to measure impact?
I sure can. So first of all, the idea behind this is that there is a need for people on the sidelines, in football or any other sport, to be able to determine when a player has received impact that might be sufficient to cause a concussion. Detecting a concussion is not always an easy thing. It's not like breaking an arm or getting a cut. It involves the cognition of the person, and there's no external evidence usually except they might have been hit.
Right.
And so what our goal in this was to create a simple device that would be readily accessible to a wide audience, that would be intuitive to understand that there had been an impact. And our goal in terms of a wide audience was driven by the fact that we recognized that for each NFL player, there's an enormous number of players in the Pop Warner leagues, in high school football, and in college football who would benefit from this technology.
Certainly, certainly. So you guys decided to put it in a very simple form.
Yes,
a headband, right? What was the decision process like in going that route?
Well, the decision process for us is we wanted something simple that was not going to cause problems or we have to worry about breakdown. We wanted something so simple it couldn't break. Mm-hmm. We also had to figure out if we knew we were going to be sensing impact on the head, what would the best format of that be? And we started out with a variety of different prototypes. Some of them were hideous, for lack of a better word.
Gotcha.
And over the course of about 200 prototypes and models and talking with a variety of people, including Dr. David Kaufman, who's the chair of the neurology department here,
right,
and Dr. Sally Nogle, the head athletic trainer, they've been enormously helpful, and talking with the players themselves, what would be useful, what would work, what wouldn't work. After 200 prototypes, we've come to a simple headband that goes on. The idea is that this goes on to the player's head. Mm-hmm. They put their helmet on, and they forget that it's there.
Wow.
That's the goal.
That's the goal. Now, again, this is being tested right now throughout Michigan State spring football practice, and we saw the footage of that. They're in the practice six right now. I got to know, what have you found so far, Gary?
Well, what we found is that, in fact, we can detect when some players do hit hard.
You can.
And we have also found that as simple as this device looks, it still doesn't provide quite the optimal ergonomics.
Okay.
And so the sensing of the impact is working absolutely fine. But the problem is that we've got to get this to the point that the players don't even know that it's there and that it doesn't get in their way when they're playing.
Okay, I want you, Gary, right now in that camera to sort of break down what the headband is made of and also how it detects impact. Mm-hmm. I believe it has strips inside of it, right?
Yes,
so can you
does.
Kind of dumb that down
Certainly.
For us?
So the idea behind this is we want something simple that anybody can look at quickly and evaluate the force and location of an impact on the head. So if the player was wearing this and they were impacted, this material, it's like a swimsuit material. It's designed to breathe, it's designed to be light and to stretch. The player would be wearing this on their head. If it was thought that they received a hit that possibly rung their bell on the field, they'd come over to the sidelines, the helmet would come off, the athletic trainer or the doctor would take this off, would invert this so that they could get at the sensing strips. They would pull out the sensing strips and look for markings that were on these. Mm-hmm. The shape and the intensity of the marking on the strip would tell them how much impact the player had received at what location on their head.
Mm-hmm.
And that information, it's by no means a diagnosis. It's not intended to be that. This is meant to be an aid in the evaluation process of concussions by a medical professional.
So you want to put it out there, this will in no way, shape, or form let you know if you have a concussion. It will just aid in the process of evaluating if you do have one.
That is correct. This is not it's not a concussion detector. It's not a diagnostic by any means. This is an aid to help in the evaluation of a player by a medical professional.
Okay, hypothetically here, Gary, yes. If a hit happens yes. and a player is wearing this, what will show up on that strip?
If a player receives a hit to the head, they will see a mark on this strip. It will either be a circle for a weak impact, or it will be a circle with the image of a star getting progressively more pronounced with the magnitude of the impact. So a weak hit would show only circles at the locations
like a
of
dark,
the impact.
Like a black circle?
Like a ring.
Okay, like a ring.
Like
okay.
a ring.
Gotcha.
Probably a ring about the size of my thumbnail.
Gotcha.
And as if the hit were progressively harder, that ring would get more intense in its color, in its depth of color, and you would start to see the image of a star come out. And by the time you got to an impact of 90 to 100 Gs, that would show a star in the middle of the ring. So if you're seeing stars, you're going to see stars.
So you guys had some fun with this, when putting this thing together with the graphics that show up when a hit occurs. That's,
yes,
that's
we did.
Pretty cool, and it kind of differentiates it from other testing technology out there
that's
that is
right.
designed to help in the aid of seeing if a player has concussions or not.
That's
now,
right.
how does that strip do that, Gary? What's it made up of?
Well, the strip has internally, it's got five different components.
Okay.
And that's the intellectual property that goes into this is what makes this work. But it's a multi-component system. And together, these components allow an image that appears on this strip that is proportional to the magnitude of the impact that it receives.
Wow, remarkable stuff. All right, so again, practice six has just concluded for the MSU football team. And a few players, we can't say what players have been wearing this technology, but a few players have been wearing this technology throughout spring football. What's been the evaluation of how foolproof this headband has been so far?
The evaluation that we've come to so far is that we are seeing when players receive impact, we can detect that. The issue that we're working with now is this is a beta prototype.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue that we're working with now is to get the ergonomics right so that everything works the way it's supposed to during a game or during a practice, and that the players don't have to fool around with it or experience any sort of issues with it during the game. So mm-hmm. we've learned an enormous amount about how to make these more functional.
Right.
But
right.
the actual sensing has also shown us that these strips are working as intended for the job.
Really briefly here, Gary, what hurdles have you encountered when talking to the respective athletes who have donned this headband?
The problems that we have run into mostly at this point have been that when they put the helmet on, the headband moves from where they had it initially.
Okay.
And that, I think, stems from the fact that, of course, it's important that these helmets fit very snugly on the players so that they're getting the protection from the foam padding in the helmet.
Okay.
And getting the headband has to have as little a profile as possible so it doesn't interfere with any of the padding, or so that it doesn't get moved when the helmet gets put on.
Okay. And
that's a leading issue for us to deal with right now.
Now, a few players will be wearing this during the spring game, am I right?
That's my understanding. They have been wearing it during hitting practices, and we've learned a great deal from them. And moving ahead, we believe that some number of them will be wearing this at spring practice.
Wow. All right. Well, I tell you what, you just saw a bite, Gary, from Darian Harris, former
yes.
Michigan State linebacker who has dreams of going to the NFL. I asked him about the situation when it comes to concussions, because I know, Gary, when it comes to yourself and Marcos, this is a bit personal for you guys. You guys are both fathers,
right.
and, you know, there are many parents out there that are concerned about their little one playing the game. So I asked Darian whether or not concussions scare him as a player, and here's what he had to say.
It doesn't scare me necessarily. All it does is make me want to be more informed. So, you know, when I look at everything that's going on in the world of football, they're talking about concussions. You know, I always say this, and I'm not afraid to say this, and, you know, I can knock on wood or whatever. I've never had a concussion in my life, and I play maybe the most violent position in the game and play it at a high level, I'd like to think. And I love hitting people. You know, I love hitting people as hard as possible. I love the big hits. And I've still, you know, never had a concussion because I do it the right way. So there's always right ways to play the game. And when I look at, you know, guys like a Chris Borland who hung it up pretty early, for fear of concussions. You know, I totally understand it. You know, if he has a history of that, you know, obviously it's time to find out something else to do.
Yes, that fear for many players is certainly real, Gary.
Yes, it is.
How scared should players be?
Well, the issue really is if one is concussed, concussions can be recovered from. And I would leave the details of the recovery and how seriously one should be concerned about a concussion to a neurologist who knows what they're talking about. I'm not one, and I don't pretend to be one. But it is my understanding that individual concussions, if they're allowed to heal properly, are not the disaster. The real problem is if a player is concussed and that concussion is not detected, they go back in and they experience subsequent injury while they are still recovering from the first injury. Mm-hmm. It's the multiple injuries, one on top of the other, that can become problematic, is my understanding of the situation.
Now, I know, I understand you and I were chatting before we took the air, Gary, and your son didn't play, right?
My son did not play.
If he came to you, and just really, really quickly here, if he came to you and said, hey, Pops, I want to play football, what would you say?
I would ask him if he wouldn't want to play in the marching band instead.
I may have the same response, Gary, okay? Golf. What about some golf or something, right?
Right.
I don't know.
That's just my personal take on it, though.
Okay.
I don't mean that as a value judgment on any of the players.
Right.
I think what they do is phenomenal. And our goal in this is to protect our players, the Spartan players and all others as we move ahead.
All right, again, ladies and gents, you can catch Current Sports TV tonight. Again, you heard a snippet of my sit-down with Michigan State University chemistry professor Gary Blanchard. You'll also get a chance to hear from Ariel Powers and her decision to go to the WNBA, and even our feature on bike polo. Yes, we are running that this week as well. Again, tonight, 10:30 p.m. on WKAR-TV. It is Thursday. Each every Thursday, we love to take a look at what occurred on this particular date in sports history. We dub it Throwback Thursday.
But the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long.
Eisenman back over his step. Into the slot for Brown.
Shoots. Yes. And there it goes.
You never know when to expect it. Darren McCarty said before.
All right, I've got three for you guys. On this date, April 7th, back in 1955, Fort Wayne beat Syracuse 74-71. It was the lowest scoring NBA playoff game since the introduction of the 24-second shot clock. 1959, Bob Cousy of the Boston Celtics achieved 19 assists to tie an NBA playoff record in a game against Minneapolis. And how fitting is this? 1963, at the age of 23 years old, Jack Nicklaus became the youngest golfer to win the green jacket at the Masters Tournament. I did not plan that, folks. That was, I literally just saw that just now, Isaac. How fitting is that, right? Destiny, thy name is Current Sports. And a quick update on the Masters, Jordan Spieth still leads at 5-under through 13. All right, we are unfortunately out of time, ladies and gents, boys and girls, but we will be back at it to close out your week, same time, same place tomorrow. Thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to this edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR, AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care, have one fantastic afternoon, enjoy the Masters, and be easy, people.